everyone, and welcome to another episode of Retro Reminisce, the gaming podcast that basks in the golden age of gaming by delivering a weekly dose of old school nostalgia. This is episode number 16, and this week we'll be talking about Conker's Bad Fur Day, Rare's naughty swan song for the Nintendo 64. We'll discuss how it stood out amongst a library of N64 games that were more family-friendly, our personal memories of it, and how well it holds up 15 years later. We'll also give you some current pricing trends in case you would like to check this game out for yourself. Before we get started, don't forget to head on over to thegamingoutsider.com and check out our video game podcasts, our articles, our subscribe links, and our social media links as well. Feedback is greatly appreciated, so use our email links to let us know how we're doing. Also, subscribe to this podcast via iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn, and more. Last week, we released episode 15, and that covered Twisted Metal 2 for the Sony PlayStation, so check that out if you have not. I'm your host, Josh Faulkner, and I'm here with my co-host, Justin Wilson. Justin, what's going on, man?
Oh, hey, how you been?
I'm doing good, man. How you been this week?
Oh, I have literally been doing nothing but playing this game. I actually, small confession, my wife reminded me our anniversary is in a few days. I was like, oops. Oh, yeah, I've been pretty caught up in this. I actually haven't touched anything else. It's been a lot of fun.
Awesome. I've actually been doing some retro collecting this week, so got into hitting my rounds around the local retro shops and just the secondhand game stores and stuff, and picked up a lot of PlayStation stuff this week. I've been kind of on a PlayStation kick lately, but I found a really, really good shape copy of the original Grandia for the original PlayStation.
Oh, nice.
That's a really popular JRPG, and it's starting to get a little harder to find. I found a really good copy. Great shape for a pretty decent price, and I like to collect the JRPGs for PlayStation, and that's one I didn't have, and I've never played it before, but I love the sequel on the Dreamcast, so I picked that up, and I got that in my collection. I plan on checking that out pretty soon, but yeah, I grabbed a couple extra long box PlayStation games. I like to collect those too, the ones that came in like the longer cardboard boxes.
Oh yeah, I remember those.
So I found one that was a helicopter game called Thunder Strike 2. Grabbed that one, never played it before, but it was only like $4, and it's one of the long box ones that I'll have. So
nice.
Been doing a lot of that this week. So, and of course, playing Conker's Bad Fur Day. So let's go ahead and get started on this.
I think now, I want to give a disclaimer. I think this is going to be the raunchiest episode we've probably ever had.
Yeah. Now, when you download this podcast, it does say that it is a mature podcast because we do curse every once in a while. But you're probably going to get even more of that in this episode. So just a disclaimer, even though we don't curse that much. But you're probably going to get some here. So. So let's go ahead and get started now. Conker's Bad Fur Day came out in March of 2001 on the Nintendo 64. It was actually one of the last N64 games to get made, and it was the last one that Rare made for the N64. And this game's kind of not really considered a retro game. This is because it came out in 2001, but it's N64. So we thought we would go ahead and make an exception and go ahead and talk about it. But it was developed by Rare, obviously, and it was published by Nintendo, but it was later published by Microsoft once Microsoft owned the IP and they purchased Rare. This one in particular was originally developed by published by Nintendo. The genre is a platformer, and it's a very, very naughty platformer, and we'll get into all that here soon. But this game actually started out as Conker's 12 Tales, which was an early N64 game that was being developed by Rare that was very kid-friendly, very colorful, very cutesy, with this little squirrel named Conker. And at the time, Super Mario 64 came out, and their design was looking very, very, very similar to Super Mario 64. And then they had other people on the team working on Banjo-Kazooie and everything, and it was getting to the point where Conker was just way too similar to all these other platformers that were coming out on the N64. So they scrapped the whole idea and just forgot about it. The creator of Conker, though, wanted to do something with the assets and something with the character, so they came up with this idea to make a Conker platformer, but to just kind of go off the deep end with it and just do something really silly with it. So it started off with just doing some goofy jokes, and then it snowballed from there, and it formed what we know of Conker's Bad Fur Day today, a very mature game, which was odd to see on a Nintendo 64 because everything was just so kid-friendly then. And it was surprising to know that Nintendo was actually very supportive of this game, too. I think it was because maybe the PlayStation was catered so much towards an older audience, and a lot of their games were more mature, and it was selling much better. So I think they were kind of making some exceptions and letting the developers play around in the more mature realm that of games that they were publishing. So now we're going to talk about the story here a little bit, but we are going to spoil this for you guys. So if you don't want to hear the whole story, you might want to skip up about 5 minutes, but we're about to go through the whole thing for you. So Justin, go ahead. What is Conker's Bad Fur Day about?
The story's just so wonky, in my opinion. It kind of deviates around a lot. When I booted it up, I completely forgot about the intro because I didn't obviously see this movie, a lot of these movies, before I played this game. But it starts off with a Clockwork Orange-style intro. He's sitting in a throne. He's drinking a glass of milk. He's got all his, you know, his buddies around him and everything. And it does a flashback sequence to how he got here. That's pretty much the whole game. And he's binge out on a night binge drinking, and he has to get home to his girlfriend Barry, and he gets lost. He's not really sure. He's wasted. And in the process of him getting home, the ruler of the land he's in, the Panther King, is trying to figure out why his table won't stand up and why his glass of milk keeps falling off from his table. And he has this scientist guy figure it out.
Professor Von Cripplesack.
Yeah. Oh man, thanks for I just don't think I could say that without laughing. But
yeah, he's like a German like Nazi scientist kind of exaggerated character.
Yeah, they're all pretty stupid. Like he's going through all these different like almost like a montage of trying to figure out why the table three-legged table won't stand up. And he figures out he needs a squirrel because the squirrel's the perfect height to hold the table up. So he's going to
a red squirrel.
A red squirrel.
Too.
Yeah,
it has, not any squirrel, it has to be a red squirrel.
And so he sends off all his bad guys to try to capture Conker, and then they go through some obvious movie spoofs, if you will, like when you're fighting a haystack and it's Terminator, like it turns out it's like a Terminator spoof. And then Bram Stoker's Dracula, there's like a whole level based on that, and then there's a whole level based off Saving Private Ryan also,
and The Matrix and Aliens.
I forgot.
And all kinds
yeah,
of stuff.
Yeah,
there's Wizard of Oz references. I mean, there's all kinds of movie references. There's some to The Exorcist as well. There's just a lot of movie. If you're a big movie buff, you'll notice a lot of homages to a lot of popular movies.
But and basically, as he's trying to return home, he gets distracted by money. Now, money in this game, as far as I know, other than needing the initial $10 that you get back, is pointless. It's just a collector's. It's for the people who want 100% the game.
It's basically the stars from Mario 64, except that you don't need them to gain access to later levels. So it's kind of there, but you primarily collect them by completing goals.
But it really threw me off in the beginning because they give you money and the scarecrow guy says, I won't do this until you get $10. So, and that's the first time you really come across money. So you're thinking, oh, money's currency. You're going to use it to spend. And it's not, it's just to collect. So I thought that was kind of goofy. But basically you end up getting staged by the rat mob. Like a Godfather style reference, and they set you up.
It's ran by a weasel named Don Weezo.
Yeah, they set up a fake bank heist, and set you and Barry up. And among the scuffle, Barry ends up dying. And then there's just this really obscure alien reference where they actually like break the fourth wall. It's freaking crazy with that. But it turns out you're in a spaceship. And Dr. – what was his name? Von Weasel.
Von Cripplesack.
He created some of the earlier baddies you beat up. So he ends up putting an alien inside of the Panther King, and that's what the Panther King dies from. And then that's when you figure out you're on a spaceship and that the doctor created the teddies that you ended up killing. And then the game just completely freezes when you're fighting the alien, and there's a fourth wall break, and he just gets a hold of a coder. He's like any any coders out there, any game editors.
Yeah, the game locks up. Yeah. That's what happens.
And it's a pretty goofy ending. It's pretty anticlimactic, if you will. But in the end, he ends up becoming the king. And all the people that you met throughout the game are like your servants and your friends. And at the very end, he gets drunk again, and he just ends up taking the other path that he didn't take from the beginning.
Gotcha. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the humor in this game, because that's really the selling point. The gameplay's pretty good, and we'll get into that too, but the humor is really what kind of makes this game so popular, I would say. There's a lot of fart and poop jokes in this game.
So many.
Lots of them. There's a lot of cursing, too.
I never thought I'd laugh so hard at poop jokes in my entire life.
Yeah, I enjoy a good poop joke. I mean, I like poop and fart jokes. I'm pretty juvenile, and this game's right up my alley. But the game has a lot of cursing. It feels so jarring at first because it looks like it's so like cutesy, and then and everything's colorful, and then all these people are just cursing like crazy. And the game does censor some of the curse words, like some of the really really bad ones. Like every time they say fuck, they'll blink that out. Sometimes when they say shit, they do it too, but other times they don't bleep out the instances of shit at all. But they say just about any cuss word that you can think of in this game. And the voice acting is really interesting too, because you can tell by listening to all these characters that they're voiced by like one person, and every voice is like a variation of like the same one that you heard before, but just slightly altered. And it's just like broken, like British kind of like Americanized voice acting. And it's kind of bad, but it has a charm to it as well. But it is funny watching them curse and say all this goofy stuff. And it's really the highlight of the game. I mean, did you agree with that? I mean, do you feel like the humor works for you, or do you think it's too juvenile?
Oh, no. The humor was amazing. Like, that's one of the reasons I kept playing this game and couldn't put it down. I mean, I don't really consider myself too juvenile in my humor. But I do love terrible comedy. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, like the Bram Stoker references are really, like, just terrible, terrible. I mean, they're done great, but, you know, it's just so cliche. Yeah. And the Saving Private Ryan, like, that's just one of the most 90s cliche things in the entire world. And I think it's just great that it got, you know, iconized in a game and made it so, so funny.
Yeah, and the cast of characters are really, really good here, too. And I really like Conker. He's condescending, he's a smartass, he's very snappy in his dialogue, and I think that's kind of the star of this game. Like, his replies to everything are really funny and clever, and I really, really like him a lot. Obviously, there's a lot of toilet humor in this game, too, so that's really going to just depend on if you're that kind of person that likes toilet humor. But at the same time, like, it's just the characters are very fun. Like, I love Greg, the Grim Reaper in the game, and you don't even meet him until you die for the first time. When you run out of special, you get these tails that you collect, and they're your extra lives, more or less. And, you meet the Grim Reaper, and he has this whole spiel about how he hates cats, and he's always flipping out about how he hates cats. And you meet him every time you die, and it's really funny every time you have an interaction with him. But a lot of the characters in this game are just either very stupid, or they're just like some kind of parody of some other character you've seen in literature or filmmaking before. Like, I love the blocks in this game that were in the barn stage, where the one's complaining that his wife is like the big fat one on top of him. He's like, get this fat bitch off me. And stuff like that. And I love the sequence where you meet, what's his name? It's a boss named Booga the Nut.
Yeah.
And he's in his prehistoric stage. And the whole boss fight entails that he's claiming that his bone is bigger than everyone else. Is obviously they're referring to his dick, and his little like big boob girlfriend's up there, and like, oh no, Conker's bone's much bigger than yours.
those polygons. Yeah. When they're doing that cutscene, and she leans right after Conker beats him, and she leans forward, her boobs merge together and become one, just because the graphics, like the polygon structure for the N64, this game really showcased like, you know, the max potential of it. So it didn't look the greatest.
Yeah, totally. But this gigantic, like, caveman boss of this giant bone weapon comes after you, and you have to fight him because he's mad because he's trying to prove to his girlfriend that he's got a bigger dick than you. and you're riding a dinosaur through this whole boss fight. And part of the way that you fight him is that you have to snap him in the nuts with the dinosaur because you're on top of him, and then you run around him and you bite chunks of his ass out. And then eventually, as you defeat the boss, his little like loincloth comes off, and they actually have like a little polygon wiener on him, and then everyone's laughing in the whole Colosseum of how actually his dick is really small. And it's just really ridiculous, and it's just one of the craziest boss fights that I've ever played, and it was really funny. That was one moment in this game that really stood out to me.
The furnace boss is pretty similar, too, because as you're fighting him, these big brass balls drop down from the bottom, and you take these bricks and smash him against his nuts. And
yeah,
they end
that's
up falling.
Brutal too. The first time you do it, he pulls out them bricks, and you're it kind of makes you flinch a little bit.
Oh yeah.
But and I like before that too, like the little fire imps that are controlling him. You actually get the pee all over him.
Yeah, that's how you.
So you're
going
to run around just spraying them with your pee, and it's really really over the top.
And then Conker reminded me of like Bugs Bunny for adults, definitely.
Yeah.
He almost has cartoon-esque superpowers.
He has that snarky kind of attitude like Bugs Bunny has too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's a pretty good comparison. One thing I loved in this game too in the gameplay was the one situation where they have the bees and there's like the flower that has the gigantic boobs and you have to help pollinate her or whatever, so you have to run around and get the tickle bees that tickle her. And if you get enough of them, she basically uncovers her boobs, and you can bounce on them, and you get money. But there's this whole cutscene where this giant bee's like basically having sex with her, and like the facial expressions of like they're moaning from Conker's really funny. And
my wife was sitting in the other room when the sex scene happened. And she walked in like, "What the hell are you playing?"
Yeah,
oh, it was hilarious.
There's a lot of like sex scene references in here and like sexual themes and stuff. So it's pretty surprising that they packed all that in here. I really like the paint can and the brush and the pitchfork that you have an encounter with as well. And like the banter between them three, they just basically insult each other the whole time. Like I thought that was really funny too. And there's a lot of really cool stuff in here and the humor works really well. Let's go ahead and just talk about the gameplay overall, because this is a standard platformer. You just jump. If you hold your jump button, you do like a hover. Like Conker's Tear will move around like a helicopter, and you can hover around, try to get to farther platforms. You can also hold down like the Z button on the N64 controller, and you jump while you're holding that down. You can jump higher, and then you can mix that with the helicopter move. There's also these platforms where you walk up to them, and you hit the B button, and they're like context like pads more or less, and every time you use those you use a specific action like shooting something or getting a weapon to throw or something like that.
That's and, probably my favorite part of the game right there, context pads. It's so unique. Just like what item would be most convenient for me to have right now, and it's so goofy. And he pulls like items out of his pants or you know from behind his back. It's a giant like bomb or something just out of nowhere. It's really cartoon-esque.
Yeah, and I like when you use those, like a little light bulb will pop over your head, you can use them, and I like when the bats are flying around, and you just pull out their flamethrower randomly and start like spraying them down. But it's convenient, and it makes the gameplay a little more simplistic, because you don't like earn weapons and like cycle through them or anything. It just gives you whatever you need by hitting this pad. And it makes the puzzle solving, the light puzzle solving in this game very easy, but at the same time, you don't really play this game for the challenge. It is a pretty easy game, and you don't play it for the challenge. You just play it for the experience and the humor and just a laugh at it. So the gameplay being so simplistic really isn't that big of a deal. But there is an overall overworld in this game, and a lot of the areas are all connected to each other. So the first half of the game is basically going back and forth between this overworld and finding the ways to go to new areas and whatnot and getting access to places you didn't have before. About halfway through this game, once you hit that prehistoric era stage, all that goes away, I noticed. And at this point, you're basically just hitting stages, like progressing two new stages that are all just movie-themed until you get to the end of the game and beat it. And that was one thing that always kind of bothered me, because I liked how they had a whole overworld set up and everything was connected and you had to figure out how to get to this area and what this area does and all that stuff. And they just kind of throw all that out halfway through, and that kind of bothered me. Did that bother you at all, or did you even really care?
No, I mean, like, the movie references were great. Don't get me wrong, they were hilarious. Mm-hmm. Especially, I'm a big Bram Stoker fan, so seeing that was really cool. But yeah, it did bother me a lot, because you get introduced to this really cool, unique universe of, you know, all these really, really cool, funny characters that you're actually kind of growing attached to.
And you're discovering them as you explore and stuff too, which is great. It's like they feel like they're part of the world.
But this game came out, it was one of the few games that was featured on the 64 megabyte cartridge, so I feel like maybe they just were running out of room for all their original stuff. I mean, they didn't have really any repeat bad guys. I mean, in an area, you might have a lot of the same bad guy, but if you go to a different area, they're not, you know, reusing character models or anything. And not to mention, this is one of the few 64 games that has such an extravagant script, like actual voice acting. So, you know, all that in there made it, you know, like if this game would have came out on something that wasn't the 64, I feel like it would have probably been way better.
Yeah, they actually, if you watch the behind the scenes footage for this game on the Rare Replay Collection, they actually talk about, and they actually show a map that they drew out of how much more stuff was in this game that they had to cut out, and probably because of limitations in time and budget. And everything did really connect really well. And I think you're right. Like, I think if they had more time and more space and more money, this game probably would have been one gigantic connected world. But you only get about half of a connected world, and then everything's just stages as you progress through. So that's kind of a bummer. And like we were talking before, like, there's collectibles. Like, you get the money and stuff like that in the game. And then there's certain instances where you have to collect things in order to go further. But there's no it's not like Banjo-Kazooie where you have to collect a certain amount of things, or Mario 64. It's all about just progression, just going to the area, figuring out what you have to do it, and then go back through and then backtrack and so on and so forth. But after that second half, the backtracking stops and you just forward linear progress until the end.
And a heads up, this game is, like, I'd say probably 65-70% cutscenes. So it's almost like playing a movie a little bit, literally, even with the later part of the game. But and that's, I think, one of the things that made it so great was the gameplay isn't really why you play this game. I mean, it's fun, and it has a lot of first-person shooter elements, like when you're playing the Medal – or not Medal of Honor, huh? When you're playing through the
Saving Private Ryan
part, got a very, you know, I played a lot of Medal of Honor when I was a kid, so I felt like, you know, I already knew a lot of this part. First person shooter, D-Day, you're on the beach, like, it's just been done so many times that I feel like that was the last time. That was, they did just such a great job referencing it that we can put a fork in it. It's done. We won't see any more Private Ryan references in games now.
Gotcha. So let's go ahead and let's talk about some of the bosses, because this game has some really unique bosses. Now, we already talked about Booga the Nut, the big guy with the bone, and we talked about the furnace where you smash his nuts with bricks. The most notable one in this game is the Great Mighty Poo. And this is a giant turd in a mountain made of shit. He's like an opera singing pile of poop. And he sings this whole song about how he's a great mighty poo and he's going to throw his shit at you. And you have to fight this guy by throwing giant rolls of toilet paper into his mouth. And it's disgusting because when he opens his mouth, it's all green and he's got like corn for teeth. And this is probably the most memorable part of the game. This is what everybody thinks of when they talk about Conker, is the great mighty poo.
Oh, yeah.
And I love the song he sings. It's so funny. I love the one part of the song where he goes, a huge amount of tish comes out of my chocolate starfish. And it's completely ridiculous. It's gross. And it's about halfway through the game, or a little less than halfway through the game when you hit him. But man, I've never seen a game like go that far before. And I thought it was hilarious. Did you like that boss fight?
Oh, yeah. The Great Mighty Pooh was hilarious. I loved the giant rolls of toilet paper that you just conveniently pull from the back. But my favorite fight probably that's hard. There's so many good ones. I mean, the play style really copies from boss to boss quite often. But I'd have to go with the alien just because it was so goofy.
Yeah, the alien is like the final boss, and you defeat it very similar to you defeating Bowser in Mario 64, how you grab it by the tail and swing it around, and you have to throw it out of like an airlock or something like that. Yeah, I actually like the squirrel girl a lot, too. That boss fight was really funny. This little like squirrel little girl like pops up, and she's actually a boss. And then you come to find out she's actually a puppet on the hand of this giant like mechanical teddy bear with all these machine guns. And you have to fight her. And the funny thing about it is every time you're like succeeding and defeating her in some way, because there's like stages that you go through. Every time you go through one of her stages, she starts raging out and cussing at you. And then she's like, okay, calm down. It's okay, we'll do it, calm down. And she does that every single time. And I thought it was funny how she just rage at you. And then she's like, oh, it's okay, calm down. And I thought that was really funny.
The back talking in this, like just as you're walking and like if you hit something with your frying pan and pick it up to carry it to an objective, the whole time, like everything is alive in at least the first half of this game before you get to the movies. Everything is alive. Like if there's a crate there, it has eyeballs on it. If I'm surprised the grass didn't have eyes. So, you know, it's really goofy. You get all these really unique characters, even though they're kind of, those are a little copy paste throughout the game. Like the keys are kind of the same as the cheese. But they're really funny. They plead for their lives and they do other really goofy things that keep it interesting.
Yeah, the mouse in the barn level too, where you have to feed him the cheese until he explodes.
He explodes everywhere.
And then like his little like carcass is laying there, and then later on at the end of the game you see him again and he's all stitched together. I thought that was kind of funny too. So let's talk about some of the technicals in this game. So how did you think the graphics held up today? Like and honestly, like what did you think of them at the time when this game released?
I mean, they weren't bad. The thing that always sticks out like a sore thumb to me is repeat textures. Like, you know,
very muddy too. Yeah. Very muddy textures. Well, that was an N64 thing.
Mm-hmm. But they looked good. They were capped out for the 64, I would say. It really showcased what the 64's potential was and why they needed to move forward with a new system.
Yeah, totally. And there were some things about the graphics are your standard kind of N64 graphics, especially the later games. Wasn't too much of a looker, I would say, but there was a couple things that they did in this game that were very impressive. One of them was the water effects and like the reflections from the water. I remember this is one of the first games I really noticed that from, and I thought that was really neat.
Oh, yeah.
The facial expressions from the characters, mainly Conker himself, they were actually really impressive because he has a lot of gags where his face is just reacting to certain things that are happening, and they did a really good job of making it very cartoon and lively, and I thought that was really awesome in this game. They did a really good job with that, too.
I remember one scene where they had to make a character look like slack-jawed and blank. And I remember specifically thinking that it stood out so much because the other characters just were done so well. They really look like cartoon characters and not like, you know, polygon sprites or whatever.
Yeah. Gotcha. So how about the controls? Like, how did you feel about the controls in this game?
For the record, I hate the N64 joystick. It just it doesn't work well. It has like that convex. It doesn't, you know, dip in like modern controllers do for your thumb to sit in there, and it's hard plastic. I remember getting blisters from playing games so long. And like it has the hexagonal little whatchamacallit, like where the joystick
grooves.
It kind of can lock in place, which can be good for some games, but a game like this where you have like very limited camera control. It's not like too refined when you use your C buttons to move your camera around. Like if you're trying to aim when you're doing a first person shooter part, that camera really slides around a lot. So when you're trying to do that to jump and from platform to platform, the controller doesn't feel as smooth as modern day controls. Feels like it really needs it just because it's so heavy on the platforming.
Yeah, the biggest problem with the N64 controller is that all the analog stick, all the pieces are made out of plastic. So as you use that controller, you'll notice that white kind of dust starts coming out of the analog stick's base. That's because the plastic's rubbing together and it's stripping it down. And later on, after a while, that stick gets really loose. And it's hard to play N64 games nowadays because it's hard to find controllers that aren't like that, because a lot of them that you can buy are used. You can buy new ones now, but even they are the same, you know, and it's hard to get that good feeling out of them. And then to play games like this, that are especially like platformers, are really precise with the platforming. So it definitely does take a hit in the controls based on that, especially if you're playing it later and you have an older controller.
I think N64 controllers should come in two different ways when they're used. Has played Mario Party, hasn't played Mario Party.
yeah, really. Because your buttons are probably not going to be very well if you played Mario Party.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But the game controls pretty well still today.
Oh, yeah.
My biggest problem is with the controls is that the attack button that you use, like your frying pan, there's sort of a latency to that. Like after you use it, like there's an animation that plays out, and then there's kind of like a second of nothingness. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, I died from the bowl like twice because of that. Because I would accidentally hit the frying pan instead of the jump button, and I'd swing it, and I'd be able to jump in time if it wasn't for that like dead time. It's like I'd say a solid second or two, and that's valuable when it comes to platforming and boss battling.
Yeah, I felt like they needed to smooth that out a bit. Like that was kind of rough. And I noticed that when you're pushing forward on the analog stick. Like, sometimes when you turn, I feel like he turns a little bit too much. And there's a lot of sections in this game where you're on sort of narrow platforms. And I would fall off of them a lot because I went to turn. And even if I was turning a little bit, like, he would just dart off to the side too much. And I didn't feel like the analog controls were very smooth as they should be, especially as compared to Mario.
What about that barrel riding level? How'd you feel about the controls then?
No, I didn't like that. I didn't like the lava surfing stage either.
I loved
it. It was
that
hard to catch it. Yeah, see, I didn't like that. I kept hitting walls and stuff and dying, but that one wasn't as bad as the barrel part, though.
The barrel was very infuriating. That was one of the times where I had to set it down and walk away because it was just – I kept falling off at the same spot, and, you know, I'm just like, I need to stop.
Yeah. So what about the music? Did you like the music?
I really liked the Haystack level music. It was really like, it reminded me of, what was it? Mario, I want to say. And it kind of had that, you know, you'll insert a sound clip. They'll see.
Yeah. I'll put that song in here. I actually really like the overworld music, like the main music that plays, just in like the main hub in this game too. I thought that was really catchy. But as you go through the movie parodies, like the music starts to get a little more generic, I notice, like in the Matrix level, the Matrix parody, like they're trying to play like this like trance techno song, and it didn't really fit very well to me. I know what they were trying to channel the Matrix, but it just sounded kind of goofy, and they kind of do that. But I feel like when they made the original kind of catchy music for the game in the earlier stages, like I thought that was really well done.
I liked the rock level where it was like a rave.
Uh huh.
That music had me singing along or humming along to it quite a bit.
Yeah, totally. So what about the difficulty in this game overall? How do you feel it stacks up, just difficulty-wise?
It's hard to tell where to go sometimes. Like I ended up
There's no direction.
No, not at all. I ended up going to the Haystack level, like, I want to say twice, yeah, because you free the Terminator-esque Haystack. I didn't know where to go from there. I thought maybe I got to go learn an ability or something and come back like a double jump or something to get to that haystack and do that whole part. So I actually left and went to the poo level and where you have to fight the bull and all that, and then went back to it. So there's a lot of doubling back if you get stuck, but that's also nice because there's so many other areas you can go to that if you get stuck, it's really easy to go to a different area, knock that one out, and then come back with a fresh perspective on it.
Yeah, the barn level, which is one of the earlier stages, that one's actually kind of hard to find because it kind of veers off to the side when you get into the Pooh Mountain stage. And I kept wanting to go into the area where the Great Mighty Pooh was, but it wouldn't let me in there yet. And I was kind of lost. And then I finally figured it out that there's like this little cave kind of off to the side there. And that's where you go to one of the main areas in the game. And it is a little hard to figure out where you're going sometimes.
I got stuck at that part too, for the record, so don't feel too bad.
Yeah, but in terms of like the encounters and the bosses and the enemies and all that stuff and all the sort of little puzzles that they throw in there and stuff, it's all pretty simple. None of it's really too hard. The bosses, once you know how to defeat them, it's not hard to do it at all. It's harder to figure out what to do than it is to actually fight them. I'd say the Great Mighty Pooh was a little tough because you had to throw the toilet paper while he was throwing balls of shit at you. And it was kind of hard to try to toss those in his mouth while he was throwing all those. But you can actually use a roll of toilet paper and throw them at his balls of poop while they're in midair to squash them out. So you have to kind of learn how to do that in order to stay alive. But otherwise, other than just falling to your death, the game was pretty easy.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the chocolate is your health, by the way. You have a chocolate bar of 6 squares, and it respawns. So there's certain areas where it takes a while for it to respawn, but it'll respawn. So oftentimes, if I was running out of life, I actually only had to use 2 lives that weren't like direct falling to your death. Because I would just go stand there and walk away for 5 minutes and come back and I'd be full health again. So that makes it, you know, pretty easy that health's pretty prominent throughout the whole game.
All right. So let's talk about the multiplayer a little bit. Did you play the multiplayer much in Conquer at all?
I never had an opportunity to play a multiplayer because when I was younger, my mom saw me playing this game like right when I started it up, and she never let me play it after that. So no, I never got a chance to play multiplayer at all because this is the first time I actually really got to pick it up and finish through the whole game.
Well, you're not really missing much, at least in my opinion. The multiplayer, there's a lot to it, but I didn't think it was very fun, and I thought the frame rate was really bad, and which most multiplayer games were on the N64, but it had a very large scope to it. So, I mean, it had 4 players could play. There was 2 teams. It was the Teddies versus the Squirrels. There was bots that you could have on your team and run around. And there was like big set-piece levels that were based off the movies and everything, too. Like, there's one for Save a Private Ryan and whatnot. They also had all these different modes, and there was ones that involved the raptors from the prehistoric stages and the heist stuff and all that, and there was a lot here, but I just personally didn't really find it that much fun, and I didn't really have a lot of friends that played it either, so I never really got into it. But the Xbox version, which we'll talk about here in a minute, actually had a much better multiplayer mode that was all online and everything, too. So, honestly, you're not really missing much. All
right, That's good.
So the game had an Xbox port. When Microsoft purchased Rare from Nintendo's grasp, I guess you could say, they basically had to make a full remastered version of Conker's Bad Fur Day with all new graphics and everything. It was called Conker Alive and Reloaded. This came out on the original Xbox, and the full Conker game is here with all brand new graphics. Had really impressive fur shading on the characters and everything. It was really nice. And they had the full multiplayer mode, which was much more beefed up, and it was all online. And I actually really enjoyed that. I played it a lot. The only bummer about the Xbox port is that they censored a lot of the stuff. Like, the Great Mighty Pooh song has been censored a lot, and some of the instances of shit that they cut out, and they bleeped more stuff, which is really odd because the Nintendo version of this game is actually more filthy than the Xbox version is. And that just is kind of weird. I'm surprised that Microsoft even went that route, honestly. You figure they would cram more in there, but they actually pulled less back. And it wasn't a really complete version because of that. It plays great. They had some enhancements to it. It looks significantly better. But when it's more censored, it's a little more lame, honestly. So it's a good version, but I honestly still prefer the N64 version to it. All right, so let's get into some pricing trends, just in case everyone who's listening right now wants to check this game out. If you want an N64 copy of the game, you're going to pay quite a bit. This game's actually becoming very sought out and very rare. You're looking at about $60 for a loose cartridge and about $150 for a mint complete box version. I actually had an in-box complete version of this game, and I sold it a couple years ago, and kind of kicking myself for that. The Xbox version is a little harder to find, too, but it's only going to cost you around $30, $40, so not quite as much, but more than most Xbox games that you'll find. The coolest thing about this game is you can play it on the Xbox One via the Rare Replay Collection. That collection's $30. A lot of times you can buy an Xbox One brand new and they'll package it in there for free. You can even find it cheaper and on sale a lot for about $20. And I highly recommend people have that version. It's really, really fun.
Oh, yeah,
fun.
So worth it.
Yeah, there's tons of great games in there, and it's so worth the money. And Conker's in here, and it's the full unedited version that you played on N64, and it's a lot of fun. So definitely check that out if you guys have an Xbox One. Otherwise, you're going to pay quite a bit for this one. Alright, so that would be it for this episode of Retro Reminisce. Justin, thank you for hopping on and talking Conker with me, man.
Oh, no problem. I actually had so much fun playing this game that I had a hard time putting it down. I neglected all other games and a few of my chores, to say the least.
Hopefully the daughter didn't get neglected.
Oh, no, not at all. She's at my beckoning call, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, gotcha. Tune in next week where we'll be revisiting a brand new retro game for everyone. Head on over to thegamingoutsider.com for more and email us at feedback@thegamingoutsider.com if there's a game that you would like for us to cover or to give us any general feedback on the show. We hope to see you next time, and as we leave, I would like to remind you all to visit your local retro shop, grab a golden oldie, and game like it's 1989. Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Bye.